Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 88. Lord Shiva saved from Vrikasura. This chapter describes how it is that the devotees of Vishnu obtain liberation, while the devotees of other deities obtain material opulences. Lord Vishnu possesses all opulences, while Lord Shiva lives in poverty. Yet the devotees of Vishnu are generally poverty-stricken, while Shivas attain abundant wealth. When Maharaj Parikshit asked Sukadeva Goswami to explain this puzzling fact, the sage replied as follows. Lord Shiva manifests as false ego in three varieties. According to the three modes of nature, from this false ego arise the five physical elements and the other transformations of material nature totaling 16. Perhaps you can just tell that devotee who's chanting japa to go somewhere else or chant softer. Japa time was a little while ago. When a devotee of Lord Shiva worships his manifestation in any of these elements, the devotee obtains all sorts of corresponding enjoyable opulences. But because Lord Sri Hari is transcendental to the modes of material nature, his devotees also become transcendental. At the end of the performance of the Ashwamedha sacrifices, King Yudhishthira had asked this same question of Lord Krishna, who replied, "When I feel special compassion for someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. Then the poverty-stricken man's children, wife and other relatives all abandon him. When he again tries to acquire wealth in order to win back his family's favour, I mercifully frustrate him so that he becomes disgusted with fruitive work and befriends my devotees. And at that time I bestow upon him my extraordinary grace. Then he can become freed from the bondage of material life and attain to the kingdom of God, Vaikuntha." Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva can each bestow or withhold favours. But whereas Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are satisfied or angered very quickly, Lord Vishnu is not. In this regard, the Vedic literature relates the following account. Once the demon, Bricka, asked Narada which god was most quickly pleased, and Narada answered that Lord Shiva was. Thus Vrikasura went to the holy place of Kedaranath and began worshipping Lord Shiva by offering pieces of his own flesh as oblations into the fire. But Shiva did not appear. So Vrika decided to commit suicide by cutting off his head. Just at that critical moment, Lord Shiva appeared from the sacrificial fire and stopped him, offering the demon whatever boon he chose. Vrika said, "May death come to whomever I touch upon the head with my hand." Lord Shiva was obliged to fulfill this request. And at once the wicked Vrika tried to test the benediction by putting his hand on the Lord's head. Terrified, Shiva fled for his life, running as far as heaven and the outer limits of the mortal world. Finally, the Lord reached the planet of Svetadvip, where Lord Vishnu resides. Seeing the desperate Shiva from afar, the Lord disguised himself as a young student and went before Vrikasura. In a sweet voice, he addressed the demon. "My dear Vrika, please rest a while and tell us what you intend to do." Vrika was charmed by the Lord's words and revealed everything that had happened. The Lord said, "Ever since Lord Shiva was cursed by Prajapati Daksha, he has become just like a carnivorous hobgoblin. So you shouldn't trust his word. Better to test his benediction by putting your hand on your own head." Bewildered by these words, the foolish demon touched his own head, which immediately shattered and fell to the ground. Cries of victory, obeisances and well done were heard from the sky, and the demigods, sages, celestial forefathers and Gandharvas all congratulated the Supreme Lord by raining down flowers upon him. So, we're on text 1. Sri Rajovacha. Devasura Manushyeshu. Ye Bhajantya Shivam Shivam. Prayaste Dhanino Bhoja. Natu Lakshmya Patim Harim. The King Parikshit said, Deva, among demigods, Asura, demons, Manushyeshu, and humans, Ye, who, Bhajanti, worship, Ashivam, Ostia, Shivam, Lord Shiva, Prayaha, usually, Te, they, Dhaninaha, rich, Bhojaha, enjoyers of sense gratification, Na, not, to, however, Lakshmyaha, of the goddess of fortune, Patim, the husband, Harim, Lord Hari. King Parikshit said, those demigods, demons and humans who worship Lord Shiva, a strict renunciate, usually enjoy wealth and sense gratification, while the worshippers of the Supreme Lord Hari, the husband of the goddess of fortune, do not. Text 2. Etam etad veditum itschamaha sandehotra mahanhinaha virudasilayo prabho virudha bhajatam gatihi. We wish to properly understand this matter, which greatly puzzles us. Indeed, the results attained by the worshippers of these two lords of opposite characters are contrary to what one would expect. Purport. The preceding chapter ended with the recommendation that one should always meditate on Lord Hari, the bestower of liberation. In this regard, Maharaj Parikshit here expresses a common fear among ordinary people that by becoming a devotee of Lord Vishnu, one will lose his wealth and social status. For the benefit of such persons of little faith, King Parikshit requests Srila Sukadeva Goswami to explain an apparent paradox. Lord Shiva, who lives like a beggar, without even a house to call his own, makes his devotees rich and powerful, while Lord Vishnu, the omnipotent possessor of all that exists, often reduces his servants to abject poverty. Sukadeva Goswami will respond with reasoned explanations and an ancient account concerning the demon Vrika. It's all pretty straightforward. So what's the theme? What's the theme?
Wealth.
Huh?
Wealth.
Wealth. Wealth of the devotees. The wealth of the devotees. Sorry? What's the theme, Srikant?
Basically, so devotees of Lord Vishnu are always normally in the poverty, and Shiva are very opulent.
Yeah. Why? What's going on here? And considering Lord Shiva is a renunciate who has nothing, right? And Lord Vishnu is living in opulence. Lord Vishnu is served by Lakshmi in Vaikuntha with great wealth and opulence, and Lord Shiva doesn't even have a house to live in. He lives under a different tree every night. So those who worship the renunciate become opulent, and those who worship the opulent become poverty stricken. So what's going on here? Doesn't seem like a good deal. Huh? Especially since in the previous chapter it's been recommended that we should all worship Lord Vishnu and attain liberation. So this is a paradox. Worship the poor, become rich. Worship the rich, become poor. Not a good deal. By any sort of material calculation, this is not a good deal. So Maharaj Pariksit is inquiring, why is it that Lord Vishnu reduces his devotees to abject poverty and those who worship Lord Shiva become very wealthy, opulent, powerful? What's going on here? And this is the reason why, you know, sometimes people are not attracted to devotional service. Well, because there's this fear that if I become a devotee of Krishna, then my life will be ruined. Everything will be taken away from me. I'll lose my reputation. My friends will desert me. Or abandon me. So, what is there attractive about worshipping Lord Vishnu? Sounds like a good question to ask. Huh? Text 3. Sri Shri Guru Vacha Shiva Shakti Yuta Shashvat Tri Lingo Gunasam Britaha Vaikarikas Toyjasascha Tamasas Chityaham Trida. Sridev Goswami said, Lord Shiva is always united with his personal energy, the material nature, manifesting himself in three features in response to the entreaties of nature's three modes. He thus embodies the threefold principle of material ego in goodness, passion and ignorance. So Lord Shiva is in charge of the material energy. It's his shakti or potency. The material energy is the energy of Lord Shiva. And he's always in control of the material energy. That's why people worship Lord Shiva. He's in charge of the material creation. And he manifests himself according to the three modes of material nature. Material ego is manifest either in the mode of goodness, in the mode of passion, or in the mode of ignorance. Next verse. Tato vikara abhavan shodashamishu kanchana upadavan vibhutinam sarvasam ashnute gatim. The 16 elements have evolved as transformations of that false ego. When a devotee of Lord Shiva worships his manifestation in any one of these elements, the devotee obtains all sorts of corresponding enjoyable opulences. Purport. False ego transforms into the mind, 10 senses, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin, hands, feet, voice, genitals and anus, and 5 physical elements, earth, water, fire, air and ether. Lord Shiva appears in a special linga form in each of these 16 substances. which are worshipped individually as deities in various sacred locations of the universe. A devotee of Shiva may worship one of his particular lingas to obtain the mystic opulences pertaining to it. Thus Lord Shiva's Akasha Linga bestows the opulences of ether, his Jyoti Linga bestows the opulences of fire, and so on. So as a result of accepting the false ego, ahankara, then one gets certain facilities provided for them by the material energy. These are facilitated by Lord Shiva. And as is mentioned here, Lord Shiva is in charge of each one of these different elements that expand from the false ego, and there is a worshipable form or linga for each one of those elements, representing Lord Shiva as the charge or the master of those, of the material energy and those expansions of the material energy. So as mentioned here, as a result of the false ego, we get the mind. Right? Everybody's got a mind. Interesting, actually. The mind, you can't measure it. You can't get a ruler out. Okay, here it is. You can't smell it, you can't taste it, you can't touch it. But everybody knows that they've got a mind. It's subtle. In one sense, we can measure it. You know, they say the face is the index of the mind. If we want to find out what state of, what mental state a person is in, then we look at their face. Right? Or they're smiling. So we can tell. Happy, sad, indifferent, whatever. The mind is the sense within. It's the repository, it's the sense that absorbs all of the inputs from the other senses. So the sight, sound, smell, touch, taste, all of this comes into the, and you know, in the functioning of the working senses, because we have the knowledge acquiring senses, Gyanendriya, which absorb from the external material energy the impressions, the sensual impressions that come about as a result of the senses interacting with the objects of the senses. All of these are manifest by Lord Shiva. Or shall we say, he's in charge of those. Put in charge. Of this false ego. Right? False ego means we forget that we're spiritual by nature, and we accept a material form. Right? Originally we're spiritual, but forgetting our spiritual identity, or wanting to forget our spiritual identity, wanting to forget reality, wanting to live in a state of false state, that's why it's called false ego, ahankara, then the extension of the false ego is all of these other features of the material body. Mind, then the knowledge acquiring senses, then the working senses, kamendriya, working senses being the legs, the arms, the tongue, the genital, the anus. So we've got 10 senses. Knowledge acquiring senses, and then the working senses. The mind absorbs all of the information that comes in as a result of the working of those senses. And it also has control of the function of memory as a result. So we have information coming in, and the mind absorbs that information and then converts it into short-term and then long-term memory. Those are the working functions of the mind. So not only does the mind receive, and this is a bit of a problem because why the mind is so difficult to manage or to put up with sometimes is because not only is it accepting the inputs that are coming from the senses and the working the knowledge acquiring senses and the working senses, but it also recycles or regurgitates past impressions, past experiences, past desires. Actually, this is the desires of the living entity manifest in the subtle state of the mind as a result of our karma. The interaction of the senses with the objects of the senses, the interaction of the senses with the mind, and the nature of the living entity according to the modes of material nature, false ego manifest in the different modes of material nature, then we act accordingly, impelled pretty much by our desires. So Lord Shiva is explaining here is in charge of all of these things, and there's a linga, Shiva linga, for each one of these elements placed in, it's mentioned in the purport here, in sacred locations all throughout the creation. And if one wants to get the opulence of that particular feature of material energy, then one can worship that Shiva linga to get the opulence of that particular element. Right? There's one of fire, one of the mind, one of the nose, the ears, the eyes, the whatever. So they can be worshipped. That's what's mentioned here. If you want the opulence. Lord Shiva is in charge of the opulence of the material creation. He's in charge of the material creation. And so therefore he can bestow that benediction. Pretty straightforward. Only one problem with all of that is that these benedictions don't last. They're not permanent. But because people are enamored by the opulence of the material creation and they think it's going to make them happy, impelled by the material desires that they have, by the motivations, their experience and their desire for happiness. They look for alleviation of their material distress in a form of fulfilling these desires by worshipping Lord Shiva. And it's all, it's all comes about as a result of trying to relieve distress. There are two types of distress. There's the physical distress, when we get the reactions for our past karmas. And then there's the subtle form of distress, where we have desires, and we want to enjoy them, but we can't. We want to fulfill them, shall we say. But we can't. So two types of distress. And we go, we're impelled by our material desires. I want this, I've got to have that, to act. And we may even temporarily get what we desire. But because it is, it's the nature of the material energy to be temporary. And so whatever we desires we get fulfilled, we will have to suffer more distress because the fulfillment of those desires is only a temporary event. And so therefore even they are the cause of more distress. And so there are more desires. Oh, I've got to get rid of this distress. I need this. I need that. So therefore, let's go. Do more things. Or let's worship Lord Shiva. And then I can get what I want. One way of doing it. But the devotees of Krishna not recommended to the devotees of Lord Vishnu, not recommended to pursue these material desires, because basically one just gets caught up in this never ending cycle of happiness and distress, sukha dukkha. And of course it's all temporary. Rather, a devotee is recommended to be tolerant of the comings and goings, the happiness and distress. Agama payano nityas, tongues to tikchas bharata. Krishna's instruction, second basic instruction in the Bhagavad Gita. After the, you know, you're not the body, you're a spirit soul, which means sat, permanent. One then has to learn to tolerate the asat, the impermanent. Matra spashastu kuntaya sitosna sukha dukkha daha agama payano nichas tongues to tikchas paparata. And the problem with becoming absorbed too much in these material affairs is that one loses a sense of identity, loses connection with his spiritual identity. And we relate to this body, to this false ego, to the modes of material nature that affect the false ego, and then consequently the particular mental conditioning that we have, the sensual and karmic reactions that we get. The devotees of Krishna, Lord Vishnu, look for happiness, shall we say, pleasure. We're all pleasure seekers and under my obhyasat. Everybody's looking for pleasure. But for the devotees, they're encouraged to seek pleasure in transcendental happiness based on transcendental knowledge, which comes about as a result of sacrifice. They're encouraged to sacrifice, but for a transcendental purpose. One may not get material facility, because that doesn't mean that devotees have to be poor. Because as Prabhupada points out, you know, Krishna is very, very wealthy, but he's not a poor man. And he will look after his devotees, but he won't give them benedictions that are not healthy for them. This is really one of the main features of this story. He won't give them material opulence that they can't handle or can't manage, that will bewilder them and put them back into illusion. And so, you know, we see with the devotees like, look, the Goswamis, for example, they live very, very simply. Even Lord Shiva is a good example. You know, he's a devotee of the Lord. He's a Vaishnavanam Yathashambhu, is described. Lord Shiva is actually the best Vaishnava. And how does he live? He lives very, very austerely, very simply. He understands the, you know, the futility of material enjoyment. So he lives very simply. He doesn't want to get entangled in these things. That's why a devotee keeps... You know, the Brahmanas especially meant to keep their lives simple. Arjavam is simplicity, one of the qualities of the Brahmanas, mode of goodness. Symptom of knowledge. Lord Shiva has that understanding. Why accumulate so many material things which ultimately just give you a headache? Cause of distress. So therefore, the devotees... get their pleasures from a higher source, if you like, than just the mundane material, by accumulating material wealth We accumulate material wealth and we have it for some time, but you know the nature of the material world is that everything deteriorates. So we, you know, you'll experience it. You work hard and the money will go in the bank account. So you think, great, the money's in the bank account. But then what happens? You have to pay the rent, got to pay gas, got to pay electricity, got to pay for water, got to pay for the registration on your motor car, got to pay for the kids' education, got to buy them some clothes, just got sick, pay the doctor's bills. So, you know, you pile the money up, but then what happens? As much as you try to pile it up, there's somebody chipping away at it. Chick, 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 and so it goes down. So you bump it up, but always coming down. So there's the nature of the material world. We struggle hard to boost things up, but it's always getting chipped away. So therefore, Krishna recommends to the devotees, tolerate this, because this is not going to stop. Huh? You know, there's a promise. Yes, if you come to the casino, then you could win. You know, whatever it is that you're going to win. BMW. I think they're offering a BMW this month. Right? Because there's only one of them. Everybody comes along thinking, yeah, I've got to get it. But only one person gets it. And even then, you get, so-called get what you want, what you think you need or require. And it deteriorates. It's just the nature of the material world. So the devotees generally recommended to keep things at a minimum, keep things at a fairly simple, uncomplicated level of existence. This is the recommendation. So that one has time to concentrate on one's bhajan, especially for the devotees. Because by concentrating on one's bhajan, then one is in a position to get something which is not destroyed, something which is permanent, sat, as opposed to asat. So the devotees generally recommended to keep life simple so that one can have maximum amount of time to concentrate on one's devotional service, basically. That's our bhajan. You know, I mentioned this before. Gaur Govinda Maharaj, when he would greet you, he would say in Bengali, you know, how's your bhajan? This is how the devotees greet each other. How's your bhajan going? Not, how you going, mate? Which means, you know, how's your material life, basically? Huh? They say, how's your bhajan? Is your life uncomplicated enough so that you can sit down and chant Hare Krishna peacefully? This is our sacrifice, if you like. Jagyoy Shankitan Praye Yajantihi Sumedha Saha. So one who's Sumedha, who has good intelligence, right, understands that, okay, I can run after material prosperity. I can run after these things. But I've done that for so long, for so many lifetimes, I've run after material prosperity. And what have I got? What's the end result of acquiring material prosperity? Happiness? Well, maybe. But not for long. Not for long. I got what I thought would make me happy, but now I'm miserable. Because I'm trying to protect it, or it's deteriorating, or somebody stole it from me. You know, this is what happens in material existence. You become wealthy, prominent because of your wealth and position, and then what happens? Somebody gets envious, and then they want to fight you for it and steal it from you. So, you know, my experience in material existence is that the things that you thought would make you happy end up making you miserable more often than not. The material energy is designed in such a way so that it is much more capable of inflicting pain than it is pleasure. This is the way it is. Not that the devotees don't look for, You know, not that we don't look after ourselves or don't look up, you know, but we keep it in perspective, keep it a simple existence, so that by living simply, one can then turn one's attention to the sacrifice, not for accumulating material wealth, but sacrifice that accumulates spiritual wealth and knowledge. This is the real benefit, the real. Then automatically, the material things come automatically as a result. Especially, you know, we can see in our experience, we are not wanting. Anybody here? Well, it's nearly breakfast time, so you're probably feeling a little hungry. But most everybody gets a decent feed. Huh? We all have clothes to wear. Even if it's cold, but we're warm. Huh? So, you know, by worshipping Krishna and by serving Krishna, by performing our jagya, sankirtan jagya, then automatically we're provided for. We may not have all of the things that we want, but we've certainly got everything that we need and more. And we have plenty of time to cultivate our spiritual knowledge, spiritual understanding of things, which is the most satisfying. That's the most satisfying. Connecting with our spiritual self, right, spiritual identity, realizing who we are, and what our relationship is with Krishna. That's much more valuable than, you know, having the latest whatever that we think might make us happy, that ends up making us miserable. I remember as a teenager, you know, I always had to have the latest record. The latest, you know, whatever it was. A dedicated follower of fashion. So, you know, the new latest release of this or that or the other, I've got to have it. I had a dream once that I was sitting on top of a mountain of records. All the latest releases, but then I couldn't listen to them all. I was in anxiety because then I couldn't. I had everything that I wanted, but then I couldn't enjoy it, basically. That was the realization. So, you know, for a devotee, basically, we learn how to live satisfied with spiritual knowledge and spiritual advancement, which is a far more deep and subtle and satisfying experience than just engaging the senses with the objects of the senses, which are all temporary anyway. And, you know, only provide a minimal amount of pleasure, really, before they turn into frustration, turn sour. So the devotees look for their pleasure in a variety of ways. Not that there's no pleasure. Anandam buddhi varadanam. There's pleasure. But it's in transcendental service and in transcendental knowledge. So this is why the devotees don't worship Lord Shiva. We don't need to worship Lord Shiva. Actually, we worship the master of Lord Shiva, which is Lord Vishnu, or Krishna, ultimately. Krishna is the source of Ete Champsa Kala Pumsa, Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. He's the source of all of the incarnations. Lord Shiva is a manifestation or an expansion of Krishna. So we go straight to the top. Because ultimately we understand that, you know, worshipping Lord Shiva for material benefits is okay, but not ultimately satisfying. You worship Lord Shiva for the success of your material affairs. And ultimately you worship Lord Vishnu for the success of material affairs also. It's just that he minimizes material affairs and maximizes spiritual service or spiritual affairs, spiritual activity. And of the two, the most satisfying for the living entity is engagement in devotional service. What's that? Savaipum sam paro dharmo yato bhaktir adhokshaje ahoitiki apratihata yoyatma suprasiddhati. For real satisfaction, one looks for engagement in devotional service, because that's actually our eternal position. And because we're looking for pleasure in material existence, in external things, but the irony of it all is that we're all Satchidananda anyway. We're spiritual by nature, and that means we're already full of ananda, blissful. That's why the devotee becomes atmarama or self-satisfied when he makes progress in devotional life, because he actually uncovers his spiritual identity. And that's automatically blissful. So looking for pleasure in material things is just stupid, because it's the wrong place. The real pleasure already exists within, in one's relationship with Krishna, and relationship then with the devotees and devotional service. And that's why we see in the character of very exalted devotees, they're so absorbed in devotional service, they're not at all distracted by material things. As Prabhupada quotes Jamuna Acharya, I spit at the thought. Because it's just a distraction. Entanglement in material affairs is just a distraction for the devotee. It covers our spiritual identity. So as we make advancement in devotional service, then we uncover our original happy position. Susukam kartam avyayam. Devotional service is everlasting and enjoyable. So this is why the devotees are not at all interested in worshipping Lord Shiva, because their satisfaction comes internally from engagement in devotional service to Krishna. Very simple, easy, and inexpensive. Krishna says, Patram pushpam phalam toyam, yo me bhaktya prayachati. Krishna is satisfied with an offering of a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water. Very simple. Of course, if you're wealthy and you're just offering, a little bit, Krishna's not satisfied with that. But if one's poor, one can easily satisfy Krishna with simple things. And of course, we can be easily satisfied by simple things. So this is why the devotees, they engage in devotional service to the Lord, and of course we're respectful to Lord Shiva, but we don't worship Lord Shiva for material wealth and opulence, thinking that's going to make us happy. Whereas the demons, that's their focus. Let's get material, and that's why they can't understand the devotees. The devotees' behavior is anathema. It's like, what's wrong with these people? They get up early in the morning. Why don't they go to bed? It's the best time for sleeping. Right? And then they work all day long, but they don't keep anything for themselves. They only work for the benefit of others. It's hard for people, of course, but then the behaviour of the materialistic people is darkness, nighttime, ignorance for the devotee. And that's because the devotee is satisfied in devotional service, and his happiness is within. It's not dependent on external manifestations, external situations. So even in very difficult circumstances, the devotee is happy, satisfied. Okay, so next verse is text 5, which covers some of these points. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Kanapati.
He does.
But gradually, you know, Krishna recommends in the Bhagavad Gita, one shouldn't disturb the minds of the ignorant, but one should encourage them in acts of devotion. Right? So, you know, when the devotees of Lord Shiva come to Lord Shiva and they say, I want this or I want that or I want the other thing, he doesn't say, no, you don't. Right? Because I'll get very disturbed. One who is attached to material things will just be disturbed if you tell him, look, that's not what you want. Right? You want pure devotional service. No, I don't. Give me what I want. And that's one of the reasons why Lord Shiva and the different demigods are worshipped and even recommended. Their worship is recommended in the Vedas to facilitate those who want material things. So that gradually by worshipping them, by performing the austerities of mental and sensual control that are required to worship them, even just to get material things, there's some benefit in that. So that gradually they learn the principle that by worshipping a superior, I can get a higher position. I can get what I want. My desires can be satisfied. Till they get to the point of frustration with the material energy, and they can and they can be encouraged. Yes. Look, if you really want to be satisfied, then here's the person that you should worship.
How does karma act in the life of a devotee? Suppose a devotee might have got some pious activities in his previous life.
Yeah.
Which he has to enjoy in this life.
Yeah. He tolerates it.
Does even the pious acts what you have done? So Lord Vishnu says that, you know, okay, you're not allowed to get that, even though you have done that.
No, because there's certain, you know, there's certain prarabdha karmas that you can't negate entirely, right? The fact that you were born in a particular location and you live in a particular place and that you're endowed with a certain amount of intelligence or the lack of, right? There are certain karmas that we have to tolerate. So, you know, it might be considered good karma to be born in Australia. Right? The lucky country. Right? You might think, yeah, I'm living in the lucky country, I'm lucky. So you have to, we tolerate it. It's not that good. Now, in certain circumstances, the Lord may take away that opulence also. He may do. To strengthen the devotee's devotion. May do. But, you know, that's not automatic. So, you know, you can see that. As an example, we live in Australia, and so we live in a fairly opulent environment, right? Plenty of space, plenty of fresh air, plenty of good food to eat, peaceful place, right? Not much violence, unless you happen to be walking around the streets of Melbourne, you know, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, right? And you shouldn't be in any case, right? So that's good karma. So, you know, we tolerate it. It's beneficial for us in that regard.
Yes, some devotees are, see, they are very rich, some are not.
Yeah.
Again, the differentiation is...
Yeah, some are, some aren't. But who's really wealthy? The one who's advanced in devotional service, in spiritual knowledge. He's the one who's really wealthy. Because the one who apparently today has got wealth, tomorrow he may be a poor man. Right? Or one of the reasons why wealth is considered to be an impediment is because he's worrying about it. Oh, what's the interest rate? What's the value? What's the market doing? Who's looking after my property? Hey, Bala Arvind. Have a good day at school. If there is such a thing. I'm sure there is. Just to have an education is an opulence, right? So if you've got an education, that's not taken away from you, as an example. So a devotee generally tolerates these things, and that's why they generally like to keep life simple, because you know when one accumulates wealth, position, all of these different material opulences, then one simply has to worry about them.
Isn't it that demigods are obliged to fulfill your desires as long as you pay the price?
Yeah, why not? It's a deal. But, you know, not many people... Everybody wants a, you know, cheap deal. I'll give you $2, you give me $1 million. They're not prepared to actually pay the price, or they're not even able in this day and age to perform the sacrifices and so forth that are recommended in order to be to get the, you know, the facility, if you like. Yes.
Extent which is the in charge of the interiors.
Yeah.
What about Maya and Durga?
What about? But Durga is the Shakti of Lord Shiva. Now, there are different ways of describing the material energy and its workings. So there are various ways of looking at it. And Bhagavatam gives us different perspectives on how it's working. Yeah.
Well, so how does it work with atheists and atheists that are materially well?
Yeah, they're materially well off.
They don't watch Shiva.
They don't, but they're getting the benefits of previous good karma, whether it's worshipping Lord Shiva or whoever. They're getting the benefits of past piety. The only problem with that is that it's temporary. It doesn't last. And even a person may be materially, you know, materially well off, but then look at the anxiety that they're experiencing, or the bewilderment, you know, that they're experiencing. They may have wealth, but then they're just an absolute fool. That's all they've got, and they think life is, you know. You're a success when you're driving a Porsche Boxster. Right. Oh, yes, very successful. But, you know, somebody hits their motor car, oh, you hit me. Totally bodily concept of life. And just fools, actually. No knowledge, no understanding of anything. And usually in a lot of anxiety. But they call that happiness. I've got my car. I've got my, you know, I've got my material enjoyment, so now I'm happy. But they're not. In reality, they're not. If you look closely, observe the material energy and you'll see that most people are in a lot of anxiety. Then their happiness is just a temporary relief from anxiety. But the anxiety comes back very quickly. Yes, Mahatma.
Another group
You discussed very well the Karmi Mantra.
Yeah.
You were talking about false ego. So what is the origin of false ego and how...
What is the origin of false ego?
Yeah.
As I understand it, our desire to be separate from Krishna.
How, like Mahatattva?
Sorry?
From Pradhan comes Mahatattva.
Yeah.
False ego comes automatically. So where does it come from?
Where does it come from? The false ego?
Yeah.
Where does it come from?
Yeah.
Well, ultimately everything comes from Krishna. So it comes from Him.
How does it come from living entity?
I don't know exactly. It requires a... you have to... if you read in the Bhagavad Gita, there are descriptions, and in the Bhagavatam there's even more detailed descriptions of how one accepts the false ego. But as I say, from what I can understand, basically it comes about as a result of our wanting to be separate from Krishna. We need the false ego because that's our false conception of self, so it's more or less awarded to us as a result of that desire to be independent or separate. How it manifests, I'd have to go and study the Bhagavatam.
Isn't the
Shakti
and Arana Shakti?
That's different features of the Maya potency of illusion. Yes. Avranatmika and Prachetpatmika Shakti, which means the pulling down potency or the covering potency. Most people are under the influence of the covering potency. The devotees get the pulling down potency because they're trying to get out and material energy is pulling them back in, testing our sincerity. So, or purifying us, basically. Purification. So how does one acquire the false ego? I guess it's bestowed upon us according to our desire. How it works, I don't know. No, I don't think so. Worshipping Lord Shiva, you reinforce your false ego. That's from what I can understand. Because, no, see, the thing is, we can follow Lord Shiva as a devotee, right? And he's the guru. And basically he'll be teaching us devotional service. But that's not what people worship Lord Shiva for, usually. They're worshipping him for material benedictions. So for those persons, they're seeking material benedictions, and so what do they get? They get Maya. They get covered over. If one is a devotee and follows Lord Shiva's example of devotional service, then you may get liberation, freedom from false ego, yes. But if you're worshipping him for, you know, your material benefits, then no.
Lord Shiva worships...
Krishna. Yeah. Yeah. The name. Yeah. All right, I think we should finish here. Grandra Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.